understood that this was a bridge too far. So I guess Trump's personal lawyer could face some exposure. But they've been very careful in all these proceedings, both to protect the president and to limit their own exposure to potential prosecution.
Well, Chris.
Yes, go ahead.
Chris Layman, and we wanted to move on to your other piece for The Nation that's headlined The Internal Decapitation of Fox News. Documents from Dominion Voting Systems lawsuit against Fox show the network's awareness of the flimsiness of its stolen election narrative. That's from your piece. See, Dominion's $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit lays out how Fox News hosts and top executives thought former President Trump's 2020 election fraud claims were completely unfounded, yet continued to push his conspiracy theories on air. Included in the documents was a response from Fox News executives when anchor Neil Cavuto cut off then-Trump press secretary Kayleigh McEnany for making unsubstantiated claims.
We want an honest, accurate, lawful count. We want maximum sunlight. We want maximum transparency. We want every legal vote to be counted, and we want every illegal vote to be...
I just think we have to be very clear. She's charging, the other side is welcoming fraud and welcoming illegal voting. Unless she has more details to back that up, I can't in good countenance continue showing you this.
So after that, Dominion said in its lawsuit that, quote, the brand team led by Raj Shah at Fox Corporation notified senior Fox News and Fox Corporation leadership of the brand threat posed by Cavuto's action. McEnany, by the way, is back hosting now on Fox News. Chris Layman, can you lay out what the documents reveal and what they say about Fox News, and particularly talk about the stars of Fox? What Laura Ingraham knew, what Sean Hannity knew, what Tucker Carlson knew, what has been revealed in these emails, and what they would say on the air?
Yeah, I think, you know, the clip you just played is quite revealing, because what Neil Cavuto is doing there is what's known as journalism. He's reporting on facts as he knows them and calling out a, you know, powerful spokesperson in the act of lying. That is fundamentally what, you know, in a perfect world, all journalists should be doing. What's, you know, so damning in the Dominion motion is you see again and again all the top talent and the top corporate executives at Fox in one breath acknowledging that they know that the stolen election narrative is a lie, but then tamping down. You know, they cited the Cavuto episode as something they should never do going forward. And the reason for this is their viewers, you know, who they've stoked for 25 years on, you know, resentment and grievance politics for the right, wanted to be spoon-fed some sort of narrative that Donald Trump was denied a second term unjustly. And so when the news division at Fox and some on-air commentators like Cavuto provided contradictory information, they started, rising up and going over to Newsmax, which is a bottom-feeding right-wing network that gleefully aired any and all claims about stolen elections. So Fox was in a meltdown at this moment because they saw they were losing viewership. At one point, Tucker Carlson texted Sean Hannity in a fury saying, you know, our stock price is going down, not a joke. And, you know, again, it's just not the case that the, you know, in a functioning democracy, the primary purpose of journalism should be to boost the stock price of your company. It should be to tell the truth and let the chips fall where they may. You know, there's, you know, another sort of cliche about the conduct of journalism is that it should be done without fear or favor. In the Dominion documents, you see all kinds of fear and all kinds of favor being extended to the Trump administration. So this is, such a damning moment where you come to the realization that Fox News, despite its corporate name, is not, in fact, a news organization. What they are doing is promulgating lies for the sake of maintaining audience share and high profitability.
And and we only have about a minute for this segment, but I'm wondering if you could speculate in terms of the potential long-term impact on Fox News as a result of this and the likelihood that Dominion Systems is going to prevail in this lawsuit.
Yeah, it's very unusual in a defamation case for a motion for summary judgment to be granted, but the evidence is quite overwhelming. It's a $1.4 billion suit. Fox, I think its revenues are north of $14 billion, so it would be a hit. But it's also important to, remember that a major corporation like this is going to have libel insurance is not what's scary now that we know that the only calculus that matters for Fox News is the financial one. They could well regard $1.4 billion as, an acceptable cost of doing business in the pursuit of greater profits. So we'll see. I mean, it's definitely damaging to the reputation of the organization and its, lead on-air personalities. But, the sad truth of the matter is, they did rebound from this moment when they thought they were losing audience share. They are enjoying, really robust ratings and healthy profits. So in the short term, I fear not a great deal is going to change unless we get something like the Fairness Doctrine, which is the whole reason that Fox News was allowed to exist in the first place, the suspension of the Fairness Doctrine. It's going to be a, cancer on our democracy.
Chris Layman, I want to thank you for being with us, D.C. Bureau Chief for The Nation. We'll link to your pieces in The Nation at democracynow.org. Next up, the family of Malcolm X announces plans to sue the CIA, the FBI, New York Police, and other government agencies over the 1965 assassination. Back in 30 seconds. Time by Dinah Washington. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The family of Malcolm X's has announced plans to file a $100 million wrongful death lawsuit against the FBI, the CIA, New York City, and the state, the NYPD, and New York District Attorney's Office for concealing evidence of their involvement in Malcolm X's assassination. The family's announcement came on Tuesday, the 58th anniversary of Malcolm's assassination, February 21st, 1965. This all comes just 3 months after New York City and New York State agreed to pay a total of $36 million to settle lawsuits on behalf of two men who were wrongfully convicted and jailed for decades for assassinating Malcolm X. In 2021, a judge tossed out the convictions against the men, Muhammad Aziz and the late Khalil Islam, after finding serious miscarriages of justice. On Tuesday, Malcolm X's daughter, Dr. Ilyasa Shabazz, and civil rights attorney Ben Crump, standing at the site of the assassination, February 21st, 1965, in the Audubon Ballroom in Harlem, held a news conference. They spoke about Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz at the Memorial and Educational Center in their name.
58 years ago, today, in this very room, one of the greatest thought leaders ever known in the 21st century was assassinated. And since that time, there has been speculation as to who was involved in the assassination of Malcolm X. We know on November 18th, 2021, it was confirmed and substantiated that the government agencies, the New York Police Department, the FBI, the District Attorney of New York, had factual evidence, exculpatory evidence, that they fraudulently concealed from the men who were wrongfully convicted for the assassination of Malcolm X. And they also fraudulently concealed that information, most importantly, from the family of Malcolm X. We know that based on their wrongful conviction, that the government settled the matter of Mr. Azir and Mr. Ism, Mr. Aziz, for tens of millions of dollars. This is important for many reasons. One of the most important reasons, it gives Malcolm's daughters an opportunity to seek legal redress, finally, based on the government's admission that they conceal evidence involving the assassination of Malcolm X, the truth of what happened and who was involved has always been critical. So today, at the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Memorial and Educational Center, we announce and give formal notice to the city of New York, the state of New York, and the federal government and its agencies, the FBI and the CIA, that the family members intend to sue a wrongful death lawsuit based on these new revelations that have now finally been substantiated. And the rhetorical question is this: if the government compensated the two gentlemen that were wrongfully convicted for the assassination of Malcolm X with tens of millions of dollars, then what is to be the compensation for the daughters who suffered the most from the assassination of Malcolm X? We intend to have vigorous litigation of this matter, to have discovery, to be able to take depositions of the individuals who are still alive 58 years later, to make sure that some measure of justice can be given to Malcolm X's daughters, who in this very room were present with their mother when he was shot at 21 times, 17 bullets hitting him. If anybody deserves justice after these decades, it is these women. So at this time, you will hear from Malcolm's daughter, Eliasa Sebaz.
On February 21st, 1965, my mother came here excited to see her husband because a week prior, her home had been firebombed. She walked in here happy and she left out shattered. Today, we will celebrate our father's life and legacy with the community because it is something that my mother did every year that for as long as I can remember with my sisters and just the larger community. We will also seek justice for a man, a very young man, he was only 39 years old, who gave his life for human rights. For years, our family has fought for the truth to come to light concerning his murder, and we'd like our father to receive the justice that he deserves. The truth about the circumstances leading to the death of our father is important, not only to his family, but to many followers, many admirers, many who look to him for guidance, for love. And it is our hope that litigation of this case will finally provide some unanswered questions. We want justice served for our father. Thank you.
That was Malcolm X's daughter, Dr. Eliasa Sebaz, speaking Tuesday at the site where Malcolm X was assassinated 58 years ago at the Audubon Ballroom in Harlem. Well, during the news conference, I asked the family's attorney, Ben Crump, about the role of the CIA in the murder of Malcolm X.
Can you talk about the evidence that the CIA was involved with Malcolm X's assassination?
Well, Amy, we are going to talk to those individuals who were wrongfully convicted, not just of the assassination, but in the days leading up to the assassination, that we believe this was an orchestrated effort. And so what we have to do is connect the dots. And, you know, as people get older, as they get ready to meet their maker, the hope is that they would look at Malcolm X's daughters and say, we wronged them, and we need to make that right before we leave this earth.
Family attorney Ben Crump, we end today's show on another subject, the bombshell case here in New York, as Genaro Garcia Luna, Mexico's former top security official, once charged with leading the fight against narco-trafficking, was convicted Tuesday for accepting millions of dollars in bribes from the Sinaloa cartel under the former leadership of Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, who's serving life sentence in the United States. In exchange, Garcia Luna protected cartel members from arrest, gave them safe passage for cocaine shipments and tip-offs about law enforcement operations. Garcia Luna served under former President Felipe Calderon, who launched Mexico's U.S.-backed so-called war on drugs that's led to the killing and disappearance of tens of thousands of people. Garcia Luna also worked closely with U.S. counter-narcotics and intelligence agencies as part of the crackdown on drug cartels. For more, we're joined here in New York by Penny Leo Ramirez, an investigative journalist who's been covering this closely as the co-host of Futuro Investigates podcast series, USA versus Garcia Luna. And we're joined by the great Maria Hinojosa, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, founder of Futuro Media, host of Latino USA. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! Penny Leo, your team has been getting up before the sun rises to go to count, to go to the court and be ready if the verdict comes down. And Tuesday, it finally did. Lay out the significance of this verdict and what you investigated and exposed.
Well, as you said, yesterday we were there at 3 a.m. Outside of the federal courthouse in Brooklyn, and we were waiting for the verdict. There were five counts, and he was found guilty to all charges, which is a big thing because he is this highest Mexican ever faced and now found guilty in the United States. He was once the person, the architect of this so-called war on drugs. He was the most trusted person of the DEA in Mexico. We saw in the trial, we saw pictures of him with different high-ranking members of the U.S. government, like Hillary Clinton, like Barack Obama. So the U.S. government and the U.S. agencies really trusted this guy for years, while Mexico was becoming the most dangerous place on earth for journalists. And thousands of people were dying and dying and continue dying in Mexico because of the violence and here in the United States because of the overdoses. So now we know that the so-called war on drugs was false, was completely a way to operate, to justify. And this was part of the closing arguments from the prosecution, who said Sarita Comatireri, the lead of the prosecution team, said that they created this false war on drugs to have a way to justify that they were pursuing the other cartels and favoring the Sinaloa cartel led by El Chapo Guzman. So it's a big thing, and it's a trial that involves, and we should hold accountable both countries, because this person was sort of a triple agent. He was working with the Mexican government, he was working with the DEA, and he was working for the Sinaloa cartel.
And Maria, I wanted to ask you, the impact, obviously, in Mexico of this trial is far greater than here in the United States, especially given the fact that under the former president, Felipe Calderon, there was this enormous war on drugs unleashed. Has the trial shown any indication that it went beyond Garcia Luna to other people in the Calderon administration?
I mean, there were names thrown out there, but no, really, this was not. I thought actually you were going to ask me whether or not the trial went beyond and that the United States and the prosecutors began to look inwardly and realize that the U.S. government, the DEA, the entire security apparatus failed here. I mean, Juan and Amy, we are sold a bill of goods of U.S. intelligence. We are made to believe that the DEA is lawful and knows what it's doing. In fact, there were rumblings about Genaro Garcia Luna over 20 years ago. There were questions about him. So intelligence? What exactly are you talking about? And by the way, you cannot, what we heard in the trial, right, is the level of the narco state in Mexico. Yes, this is very depressing as a Mexican, of course. But you can't assume that you've got plane loads of cocaine making their way from Mexico City, out of the Mexico City airport into New York, and that there is no corruption on the U.S. side, no corruption on the New York side. What does that mean? And that's why Penny Lay and I decided to do this podcast that has become this sleeper cult hit, both in English and in Spanish, because it's not about just pointing the finger and saying, oh, corrupt Mexican. That's a very simple narrative. What we're trying to say is that who's really at fault here, and what is this war on drugs really about, and who's paying the cost, by the way, the thousands of lives of Mexican folks, people murdered in this, people dying here in the U.S., but also the number of black and brown people who we all know who are spending time in jail now that shouldn't be there.
And this comes as the Biden administration on Tuesday announced a new border policy to take effect in May that would allow the U.S. to quickly deport asylum seekers who failed to first request asylum on their way to the United States and to use a mobile app to seek asylum. Maria, you've covered these immigration issues along the border for so many years. Your reaction to this new decision of the Biden administration?
I'm disgusted, Juan. I'm absolutely disgusted. The fact that Joe Biden who you and I know have been around long enough that he knows exactly what's going on. He knows that the people who are coming to seek asylum deserve that opportunity. And he knows what it's like to be in a caravan or in the jungles in Colombia and to attempt to have internet service to download an app before you leave Haiti to request asylum. It's completely illogical. And that's why I'm glad that you brought it up, because we cannot allow ourselves to be gaslit by this kind of ridiculous policy. By the way, let's remember that this country had the capacity to turn away Jewish refugees at the height of the Nazi era. What we are saying is remain true to who you say you are as a country of immigrants and refugees, and of course, our indebtedness to all of the enslaved people who were brought before.
And I want to follow up on that with Penny Ramirez, this issue of how immigration, how migration, people coming over the border from Mexico into the United States is directly connected to the U.S. support for people like Garcia Luna, as you were just talking about, the close relationship that the Obama administration, Clinton administration, all of them had with this man who ultimately now working with El Chapo is convicted on most all counts.
Yeah, exactly what you said is right, because it's all connected. We learned during the trial, for example, that Garcia Luna, we knew it because of my investigative work, that the same day when he left office in Mexico, he didn't move to other country. He moved to the United States. He moved to Miami to a $3 million house. Then he was living here with his family. He got a green card. He got a global entry card. So he was allowed to be here and stay here. And now part of this guilty verdict that we learned this week was that he was continuously working with the Sinaloa cartel even after he left office. So even after he was living in the United States, and they presented, the prosecution presented a chart when we saw that he was going back to Mexico all the time. So he was taking advantages of both countries, living in both countries. And at the same time, the violence in Mexico during those years, it came so big that still it's growing and growing. And what happened when you have all this violence in Mexico? Violence also goes to the south, and we have been reporting this. And you have more and more people seeking asylum, trying to come to the United States to be safer, because in their own countries they have no opportunities, they have no the economy is not good because you don't have investments, you don't have people coming in, you don't have entrepreneurs coming in or trying to start a business, because the crime, it's so big, and it's about everything. Everything, it's corrupted. And something that we learned in this trial is that if you have a person like him, who was leading the federal police, he was leading the prison system, so he was leading the whole apparatus, and he was helping one cartel and facing the other cartels to help this cartel. So what he was creating was this horrible place to live in so many places in Mexico, and people were forced to leave their towns, leave their cities, seek asylum. So we should analyze also the crisis, the immigration crisis that we have in this country and in Mexico, and all the people looking for asylum under the perspective of this war on drugs, this so-called war on drugs. Now we know this false war on drugs, and the responsibilities of people that the U.S. government trusted and created a horrible crisis. And that crisis impacted not just in Mexico, but in the region, in Central America, and of course, also here in the United States.
Well, we want to thank you both for your incredible reporting on this. Penny Lay Ramirez and Maria Hinojosa, co-hosts of the podcast USA versus Garcia Luna. Episode 10 is out on Friday. They're laying out the tracks today. That does it for our show. To go to democracynow.org, you can see Democracy Now! In English and also headlines and highlights in Spanish. Special thanks to Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Trina Nadorda, Sanji Lopez. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.